hello there, everybody. I'm Jason. That's Jacob. The show after the show, the After Show podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope everyone had a wonderful Mother's Day. Did you end up buying your mom an actual gift? Didn't we discuss this?
Yeah, not really. There was, you remember Joe's chocolates?
Yes. I created them. I made them into the success that they are today. They show up on my show, and overnight, huge success. Expanding out like crazy.
Well, I don't know.
Did we talk to them?
Yeah, yeah, we did. Yes. Well, I found some of their chocolate in the clearance bin at QFC, so I picked up those.
Because it was stale and old at that point.
No, I checked the expiration day. Yeah, it was still, yeah, it was good. I mean, they can't sell it beyond the...
It's expensive.
Yeah.
Like when it's normally priced.
Even on clearance, which it's like you can find candy in there for like...
Are you sure it was actually quarters. On clearance or someone just put it there by accident?
No, it's on clearance. Okay. It has a separate price tag. And yeah, but it was still like $3-4 for one of their little bags.
It's so good though.
Yeah. Yeah. No, really good. My mom liked it last time. That's why I was happy to get it for her. I think she liked it when she tried it the first time.
So I gave my mom the genealogy thing where you spit in the tube and you send it. She was very excited.
Yeah.
Doesn't know how it works, but she's very excited. I just did it.
She spit into the tube immediately?
She said, thank you. Oh, this is going to be, I'm very nervous. Like, what are you nervous about? What I could find out. You're going to find out exactly what you already know.
Well, I mean,
have fun.
There's that show, I forget the name of it.
It turns out I owned a whole bunch of slaves.
They don't tell, and that's like the result of basically every white person that goes on the show. Like at some point, your family owns slaves. But that
it wouldn't be. It's not going to happen in this case.
You do not learn that this early on in the process. You could pay them some money to tell you that you own slaves.
I think that's ancestry, and they'll only tell you if you're a celebrity and own.
Which
slaves.
One did you give her to?
I did Helix.
I feel like that all of them.
They might all at some point.
Like
do that.
They can, they offer the services.
But this one is ancestry, and she's going to find it's all from Eastern Europe and Italy. Mm-hmm. Like that's basically where she's going to find out most of her stuff.
She knows half of it if you've talked to her at all about what your results were.
Exactly. So there's no, I told her, you're not going to be surprised.
Okay.
And she goes, what if your brother does it? He goes, he's going to find out exactly what I did.
Yeah, that would be a waste of money.
That's a total waste of money. Yeah. But he goes, what about your genes are different? Well, that's a different test.
Uh-huh.
This is ancestry.
Right.
I very specifically said, unless you are not really his mother or her dad wasn't his father, then he's going to get the
unless
same exact
Unless there's a bigger
results.
Secret, a more interesting secret than...
Which I'm all for. If anything, I want to be the outlier. I want different parents. I want to be like, actually, your parents are so-and-so, and they're wealthy, and they're radio magnates.
You know, you wouldn't believe that.
Your dad's last name is really Channel. His first? Clear.
What? Do you...
Your mother's name is Margaret... Cumulus.
Did you grow up people constantly saying like, oh, you're just like your dad, you're just like your mom, either looks-wise or personality-wise?
They would say more so than dad. And my brother was more so dad than he was mom, but I don't know. People say that about lots of people, and I don't ever see the resemblance.
Yeah, I wonder.
I just don't get it.
I haven't met a lot of adopted people, but it would also be funny.
They
to
get
me
the
if,
same
if, yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, you look just like your mother.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense then.
I'm sure I do, but this is not her.
Right.
It gets really awkward. Speaking of Italy, because that's where my mother's side is from. I booked my November vacation over the weekend. I'm going to Italy finally because that was like the last major country that I needed to visit.
Oh, you haven't been?
I've not been to Italy yet because they're kind of difficult to fly in and out of unless you go on certain days. But if I fly British Airways through London, through Heathrow, they have daily to, I'm going to Rome first. I'm going to do 3 nights in Rome, 3 nights in Florence, 1 night in Milan. And it was originally, I wasn't going to have Florence, but...
Yeah, 3 nights is kind of a lot. I mean, at least based on what other people do. I mean, I lived there for months.
It's 2 days, 3 nights. Okay. So, I mean, it's, you know, and I was going to go to Milan and Rome, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone who I told that to was like, don't go to Milan for more than, that's boring, you're not going to like it. Go to Florence if you're going to go anywhere. So, okay, I'll do that. So, I everything is booked, flights, hotels, ridiculously cheap for some reason, which kind of freaked me out, but I'm thinking because it's on the off season.
In Italy?
Yeah, but it's not that off season because the off season starts middle of November.
It's November you're going?
I'm going for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And usually I go for a week to London in Thanksgiving, but since I'm going to London in July, and I realize I've got 3 weeks vacation I need to spend before it that does not come back. Mm-hmm. That I have to right. I have to
yeah,
eat
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So then I'm going to go to London in December for Christmas because I just checked the flights and prices. Again, ridiculously inexpensive in the context of how expensive it normally is.
Nice.
So I'm going. I'm a jet setter is how I would describe. That's what I put on my business card. So I'm excited about that. Before we get to the second part of this podcast where I'm just going to play a bunch of audio I took. I went to the anti-Amazon protest on Saturday. I was just walking by. I happened to be there. And I looked at my Twitter saying, oh, it's about to start. I'm like, oh, I'm going to walk right by. I'll go there. So I talked to Shama Sawant, who was just sitting there.
You got an interview with Sawant. So I didn't even realize you weren't even trying. Like, you didn't.
I just saw her there. I just was like, hey, you want to chat? And she goes, yeah, sure. I goes, I'm Jason. You remember me? She goes, oh, I remember you. And I did what I normally do with her. And I almost do this just as a joke, almost as trolling, even though it's true. I go, you would agree that I've been fair to you? And she's got this look in her eyes.
Yeah, what did
like,
she say?
She goes, you have been. But then I go, or she said something like, she nodded, okay. Yes, I've. But her eyes said, I hate you, that you're making me admit this.
I mean, I know you've said that for a long time. I
have been fair to her.
In the most recent piece, don't you call her insane? Like,
yeah, but that's me being fair. Like, I will,
okay.
I will be honest in my reaction.
You think it's fair to say that she deserves to be checked into some type of mental institution?
Well,
like legitimate
mental
health?
Well, I didn't say she was certifiably insane.
You. I'm asking because that's what that term means.
Okay. Yes.
I'm just saying.
We're pretending
it's fair.
That's a term that always, when
it's
uttered, it means you belong in a.
What do you think it means?
You don't think it's a. It's sort of like calling someone. It's the equivalent of calling. It's just vernacular. It's just what we use to describe things that are crazy.
I think crazy. Another word that technically means mental illness.
Yes. Okay. Well, the good news is when someone calls someone a bitch from now on, they're literally meaning female dog. That's all that they mean.
No,
so
I agree that it's been watered down in most people's usage, but at the same time, you think it's being fair to you? Like,
yes.
I think there's more fair words to use.
Yes, I think she's being crazy, and when she's crazy, I'll call her out. And when I don't think she's being crazy and other people are being crazy about her or racist about her, I've said multiple times to people's faces who go, Kushama, you're just saying that because you don't like the fact that she's Indian.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only you're purposely missaying her name. And then they'll go, oh, I would never do that. That's how I think it's. No, that's not how it's said. She's been on the show. She's explained how to say her name. I've said her name multiple times. I'm 100% certain on this. It's not mm-hmm. Kushama. And you keep doing it. It's because you're a racist and you want to diminish her. I stood up for her against the lawsuit that was filed against her by those two officers that she called out as murderers. I said that lawsuit is scary. That's not a good place to be for the law, even though I understand why they're doing it and her words were wrong. So I've defended her and I've gone after her at the same time. And I think because I've treat her with fairness, I'll call her out and I'll support her depending on what it is. And so she sort of begrudgingly agreed. But I've got the whole interview. We're going to play that unedited in the second part. And then I spoke to a crazy lady who is certifiable. I literally meant she should be in an institute for not understanding what fascism means, despite saying that she's against fascism.
Mm-hmm.
She was just not bright. But she was nice, and I was nice to her. So we'll play both those audio clips. I got stuck in an interview where I forgot to turn on my phone.
What?
Like I was going to, and then I just forgot to put it on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just was talking to this person, and he was going on a monologue as if I was recording it. I didn't introduce myself as a reporter. I didn't have my phone up as a recorder. Like, it was just, and he just would not stop. And finally.
Just walk away then.
I finally did. I go, gotta go. I did it in a very abrupt, because I gave him like 4 minutes.
Of you not recording him?
I was just, because I couldn't escape, because he wouldn't give me, he didn't take a breath.
Uh-huh.
And so I tried so bad, and I was doing the whole, I'm walking away backwards slowly to give you the cue.
He was like,
it's time to wrap
you.
Up.
Would he take steps?
No,
to
he just
you?
He wouldn't stop the conversation. I don't want to just mid sentence walk away. This is kind of rude. But at some point, like, have some understanding that if they're clearly moving away from you, it means you really got to wrap up the conversation.
I think I told you this story. Rick Steves' son, how he went on a trip.
Yes, you did. And you slighted him, and he hates you now.
They offered. Let's see if I think it's too late. Oh, they offered him for interviews.
For what?
Let's see. Award-winning author. I guess he wrote a book. So Rick Steves' son wrote a book now that they offered him.
How old is this kid?
Rick Steves' son. He is. I know. Like.
Because you say kid, he could be 42.
I would say, yeah, he's not, he's older than me. So he's, and when I knew
probably
him.
Probably in his 30s, he was maybe.
Maybe in his, yeah, late 20s, early 30s when I knew him.
What's the book about?
Let's see, Andy Steeves.
We should have a new segment where you pitch me guest ideas
yes,
on the podcast and I just say yes or no. What's his name?
Andy Steeves. The name of the book is just apparently Andy Steeves Europe. Andy offers
it's on a budget
insider tip. Yes, see, and that's his whole brand. Even when I knew, or even when I like went out, was paying him to take me on trips, was yeah, just like he mostly focused on students traveling abroad.
That's kind of, I mean, not the student part, but the budget part is still kind of in all of what Rick Steves says. Mm-hmm.
I think he truncates it and makes it like even more. I mean, but if you want to go on a Rick Steves trip, that's still going to cost you thousands of dollars. One of his branded trips. So he's got 3-day plans for each city, basically how to combine them for a longer trip. Tried and true trips, tips for saving time and skipping lines for the biggest sites.
All that stuff is just boring. Like, first of all, the skipping line for sites, here's always the answer: buy in advance. Every single time they just say reserve your tickets or buy the city pass. Okay, so I just saved you from 14 chapters of his book. The other stuff that generally they say to do that's free or cheap is just not interesting. Just not. Like, show up to your local, go to the grocery store, buy a whole bunch of stuff, and go on a picnic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not really a vacation. The vacation is you want to go and experience restaurants, and you don't necessarily want to go to their regular grocery store and have a picnic.
Yeah, I can't imagine sitting down and reading a travel book, like just broad advice for travel in
general. Have you ever read an entire travel book? I've never even gotten through a chapter. I'll skim it maybe for tips, and I bought a few of the Rick Steves like major ones once I started to think about going to Europe, and I used it as reference points. I've never actually gone every page and then taken notes. I'm like, oh, okay, this sounds kind of interesting. But the tips are always the same. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's different is, you know, if a place closes and you make a note of that in your follow-up book.
The only reason I would want to talk to him is to tell him the story of...
Well, why don't you interview him, though? Why don't you get a show, and you can interview him. In fact, I'll let part two of a future podcast...
Okay.
You can play your interview.
Interview Andy Steeves.
He's going to say, I don't remember this. I don't know who you are.
Please
can
leave
we get
me
back
alone.
To the book? Because that's all I'm here promoting, and I don't want to have this weird conversation about how you slighted me once at a bar in Amsterdam or wherever it was.
It was
where were you?
Rome.
Well, I like Rome.
I'm
already kind of on the fence going in, but I feel like you have to go to Rome.
How do you feel about Catholicism?
I'm generally a Jew. I just heard it's really messy, dirty, and like really crowded and fast.
I was only there for a couple of days, so I don't remember necessarily. I was there for Easter, so it was particularly crowded and quick, I'd say. So I don't think you'd have quite that experience. I think it'll be, if you like London... It's not as
cultured.
It's more cultured in a different sense.
But it's historical. Yeah.
Yeah. It's certainly.
And that's fine, I guess.
It doesn't feel as much like a modern city. It feels like one of the older European cities, which I think I like the modern, like kind of when you're just like walking through a downtown area, you don't get that sense as much.
I like the mixed where it's like it's clearly historic but also evolved, which is why I like a London. But which is why I did not like Berlin or Paris. Neither of those cities felt modern.
I liked more. I liked more than Rome.
I hated Paris.
Maybe you like Rome better then.
Well, we'll see. I'll tell you, and I won't tell you. You can listen to the podcast.
Yeah,
you can follow along on my Twitter feed. So we had a story we were going to do. We'll do that one tomorrow about how dating and drinking is now intermingling way too much, and as a result of that, you've got a whole bunch of people who are just getting drunk and not enjoying the dating experience. We'll talk about that tomorrow. When we come back, my interviews with the crazy fascist lady and the crazy socialist lady. I'm Kit and Shama Sawant right after this. Welcome back to the After Show podcast. Over the weekend, I had the opportunity to chat with Shama Sawant and a woman named Violet, who was there talking about why fascism is bad. They were at the anti-Amazon rally. Here are my conversations with them.
So the thought is that Durkin is going to be vetoing whatever ends up happening on Monday. So what's your general reaction?
Well, I think, first of all, I would make a note of how far the movement for housing justice has come. That this is Saturday, the day after the majority of the committee yesterday voted for a $75 million tax on big business with no loopholes, no sunset clause. So our message today is to the city council to stand strong, the majority, to stand strong on that same idea and to pass through full council $75 million, no loopholes, no sunset clause. And if Mayor Durkin is threatening to veto, then let's call her bluff. You know, she needs to stand up to the light of day. And if she's going to veto it, let her openly veto it and we'll keep building the movement.
How worried are you after the veto? Obviously, they have enough, you guys don't have enough votes to overturn the veto, that one of the five is going to switch over.
Well, you know, under capitalism, we have not only a situation of massive wealth inequality in terms of dollars, you know, between the billionaires and the rest of us, but that also implies an inequality of power. Mm-hmm. So when we build movements, we are inherently operating in a situation of a power imbalance. So whatever we do win will be based on how much we can push back against the inherent power of big business and corporate politicians. It's always a David versus Goliath fight. So when we build movements, I don't have an unrealistic expectation that we will win everything. I mean, in reality, living under capitalism is a compromise in some ways, you know, because we don't get what we need on the basis of capitalism. So the strategy for the movement has to be that we fight to win as much as we can till the last possible second. We do not back down. And our message is very clear that whatever we do win on Monday, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what it will be. But whatever we do win on Monday will be the result not of the beneficence of the politicians in City Hall or in this region, but because of the determination of ordinary people. I mean, these are the ordinary people. They're working people. They're grocery store workers, tech workers. Mm-hmm. They're students. They're healthcare providers. And they're all the backbone of the city that does not get to afford to live here. So really, I would urge people to look at this not just from the standpoint of, oh, will we get that sixth vote, which is absolutely important, of course. That's the reality. But also, I would urge your readers to frame this question in light of what vision we have for Seattle. I mean, whether you are on the right or on the left, like me, you are probably facing the affordable housing crisis. Just by statistics, I think most of your readers are also struggling to pay their rent. So I would urge them to look at this not from an ideological standpoint, but just from a day-to-day standpoint. If you are having difficulty paying your rent every month, then let's think about the kind of vision you want for Seattle. In 10 years' time, do you want Seattle to become more of a playground for the wealthy, where only rich people with six-figure salaries and billions of dollars can live? Or do you want this to be a city where regular people who go to work every day can also live? I think this is what this is about.
Last question for you, because I've been very fair to you, as you know, but I've been critical lately because you took a position that Amazon should be prosecuted. Attorney General Ferguson just on Friday said, no, that's a dramatic misreading of the law, as is Rob McKenna, like everyone who knows the law is saying that was outrageous. Was it? Do you have any regrets? What did you look at in order to accuse them of breaking a law, committing a felony to the degree that they need to be prosecuted?
Well, our movement joined Working Washington, which is a labor organization, when they said that it is illegal to threaten or issue open threats to elected officials to influence their votes. Look, I'm not a legal expert, and whether they were legally right or wrong, what it did point out was the complete shamefulness of a corporation as powerful as Amazon that is easily able to pay this $10 to $20 million of tax. It's like pocket change for them, given how much profits they make. So given how stark the difference is between how much Amazon has and its unwillingness to pay and its shamefulness in holding construction jobs hostage and using that as a club against the movement for housing justice, that is absolutely shameful. Now, whether that is legally prosecutable or not, that is not a question I'm preoccupied with.
But isn't it shameful to use the potential from your office as a government leader to silence people by threatening that, hey, if you come out and do something that's in opposition to our cause, we're going to prosecute, when a law wasn't broken.
I wouldn't think of Amazon as a person. This is a behemoth corporation that is that made $5.6 billion of profits, not revenues, last year. And only in the first quarter of this year, they made $1.6 billion of profits, which mathematically is equal to 80 times the 80 years of the tax that they would pay if this if the $75 million went through. So I do not accept that Amazon is an ordinary person who has been threatened or silenced. I mean, I think you're flipping reality on its head by saying that. There is no potential. Amazon's corporation is owned by billionaires. We're not talking about tech workers or the warehouse workers or prime drivers or the Amazon pilots. We are not talking about the workers who work at Amazon. And as a matter of fact, it's the workers who create the profits for Jeff Bezos and the other billionaires. When we say Amazon, we're talking about Jeff Bezos and the billionaires. And I think it would be an extreme flipping of reality on its head to say, well, Jeff Bezos is an ordinary person. No, he's not. He's the richest man in the world. And just a few days ago, he said he has so much money that he doesn't know what to do with it, that he might shoot it off to outer space. And 2 days later, he says he can't pay $10 million in tax, which is like pocket change, like lint in his pocket. And so I would say we should get our facts straight and keep things in proportion and understand that the vast majority of the working people in our city and small businesses who are struggling to get by, who are struggling to pay the ever-rising rent, have nothing in common with the richest man in the world and with the billionaires he hobnobs with.
Thank you.
And here's Violet of resistfascism.org.
No, can we move just a little bit away from the speaker? 111. Can you tell me your name?
Violet.
And what's Refuse Fascism?
Refuse Fascism is building a movement to bring on mass, nonviolent protests in the streets day and night until the Trump regime is gone, until the powers that be remove them. Whatever happens with this, we're looking for like kind of a political crisis in society, that they have to, because they're going to be fascist. They are fascist, but they haven't consolidated it. So we have some time now to be able to do that.
How do you define fascism in this context?
Fascism in this, you know, when fascism is actually consolidated, it's like the naked fist of capitalism or whatever on the people. No soft pedaling it, so they'll be stomping on the people. Right now, they're doing some hideous things with refugees.
Trump Pence, you're saying?
Yeah, Trump Pence.
I just want to start just from the baseline of how you define fascism.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I'm not good, but I'll read you this one.
We'll read it in a second, but I'm curious what your take is.
Fascism is a system it's a system of rule of government, but not an economic system. So this system here that we have now currently has bourgeois democracy. Fascism would scrap all that, as they are doing now, they would just be.
They're scrapping bourgeois democracy?
Yeah.
What is bourgeois democracy?
This is what we live under. Democracy, some people call it.
Okay, so you're just adding bourgeois to it. You're talking in a general sense.
But that's a whole different analysis, because mainly we're concerned because they are planning to implement fascism, and every day there's new examples of how they're doing that.
Give us one just from the last week.
Well, I got two. The Iran deal that he broke out of, which makes us much closer to war. In fact, you know,
is fascism. Like, I get you disagree, and lots of people on.
Well, so what he's doing is consolidating. He's getting rid of all the things that they don't like from the previous governments, and instituting like this really a lot of power in the executive department. And this is part of their, you know, they've got their ducks in a row with the foreign policies now that they've got their people in, like who's their people? Oh, like Scott Pruitt,
But he's EPA.
He's a fascist. He's a Christian fascist. He's been a fascist for a long time. So he's very much important to their system.
But not foreign policy is what I mean.
No, but it's part of the fascist takeover, because who ever heard of anyone appointing a person that hates the EPA to be its head? I mean, that's fascistic.
But isn't your concern more that you just don't like their positions? It's not necessarily fascism, because nothing you've said, for example, is illegal. Right?
I don't care about the law, but...
I do care about the law
because they're undercutting the rule of law. They're undercutting it.
By appointing Scott Pruitt to the EPA?
Actions and proclamations and stuff. They're refusing... They stole a Supreme Court seat from Obama. The Republicans did before they got their fascist conglomerate in power.
Which one?
The Supreme Court judge that is now that, forget his name, the latest one. That was Obama's appointment, and they just wouldn't let him.
So last question, because obviously you're concerned with fascism, which is generally speaking a sort of a consolidation of power that ends up quashing all political opinion that is in opposition. So why, tell me where that's happening here at this event where you're freely discussing your position.
Well, that's what I said. We have an open window. They haven't fully consolidated their fascist regime. So we have an open window, but this will close if we don't drive them out.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate it.
There you go. That does it for the After Show podcast. I hope, Jacob, I forced to sit in here while we replayed both of those interviews. Did you like that? Did you learn something?
Yeah, that was illuminating.
Fascinated. Okay, good. Well, so play the music. Let's go. I want to go. We've been sitting here. I just listened to those interviews. I did them already. I didn't need to listen to them again. I was there for the original. I'll tell you this, though. It doesn't hold up. It didn't hold up. It wasn't as magical as when I was there in the stifling heat. It was so hot this weekend in my apartment. I just was disgusted. That's all I got.
I think it was also hot outside. I don't know if you noticed.
It's hotter inside apartments in Seattle because we don't properly ventilate or have air conditioning.
No.
And none of the windows open all the way. On the newer buildings?
Buy an air conditioner then.
I have nowhere to put it because all the windows now are different sizes and not normal traditional sizes, and they're vertical.
You can get different types of...
You find me a vertical AC unit that will fit...
You'd think I can't find one of those on the internet.
I'm telling you, you will not be able to find one for the size of my window, which is absurdly high. And I can't. I have to get tools in order to open the window all the way. So I'm near certain you won't be able to find it. The width is not normal. We did this like 2 years ago on air, where we were just trying to figure out the name of the windows that only opened.
A different apartment then. You've moved, you didn't ask. You didn't specify or look at the windows.
All of the windows are the same.
Then you moved to a different apartment building. You have the option.
No, I don't want to go to an old apartment building. Leave me alone. I'm just going to go to Rome and get lost.
I don't want to hear you complaining about it because there's so many solutions to your problem that you refuse to acknowledge.
Here's a solution. You told me you can find one. By tomorrow, I want options. And the budget can't be more than $150.
Oh,
that's high.
Get out of here.
What,
$150?
Yeah, no more than. How much do you think they cost? They're not that
expensive.
I found
one for $700.
Oh, well, I'm not buying a new system for the entire apartment complex.
You're going to go to Europe you're going to go spend 2 weeks of this year in Europe, but you want to spend $700 on an air conditioner that will legitimately make your life better?
I'd have to install it into the apartment complex and leave it there when I leave. So no, I want a portable one.
This is portable.
Is it like a window one or a portable?
It's portable. Like it sits in your
Well, I'm not spending $700. You're insane. Are you nuts?
I'm telling you.
I don't want to hear you complain. Gold air must come out of this thing. $700.